Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for downloading this show for another week. Thanks for tuning in. If it's your first time here, welcome. What I do on this podcast is I have conversations with people and try to better myself, try to better the audience. And yeah, I think this week's guest with Samantha Ferrier is it's a great chat, one that I really enjoyed. And I think after listening to it, you'll be a better human. It's a big claim, but I think there's just little things that I got out of this conversation that I can do in everyday life to make sure that I protect and care for the environment in a better way than I currently am. Really good chat. I'm kind of still buzzing from it. It was really good to talk to Sam for an extended period of time, and just her wisdom and her calmness and her knowledge around the environment and how we can care for it better was pretty amazing. Apologies for not having a show out last week. It's the first week I've actually missed the show since the podcast launched in March. And I was a bit annoyed about that. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I wanted to have one show a week every week, but life just got a bit busy. Went to Melbourne on Thursday and for that state 5Ks and had a couple of cancellations with some guests and rescheduling. So that happened, but I think this episode this week makes up for it. I think it's as good as two. I really hope you enjoy it. If you do, hit us out with some feedback. Reach out to Sam on social media. She lets you know where you can get hold of her at the end of the conversation. And yeah, probably just sit back and listen and reflect and try not to get too scared about what's happening to our environment that we enjoy so much. Thanks, guys. See you next week. Sam Ferrier, welcome to the little back Airbnb studio and welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, Thursday afternoon at 5:30.
Thanks for having me, Brady. It's a pleasure.
No worries at all. I've hardly seen you at all in the last, I've been living here for 7 or 8 years. Hardly spotted you, and I've seen you twice in the space of 48 hours at a triathlon yesterday and now catching up for a podcast. It's kind of funny the way the world works.
It is. A little bit of a coincidence.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. I think it's meant to be.
Meant to be.
Exactly right. Hey, do you mind maybe introducing yourself and just telling the listeners who have possibly just downloaded this show what they're about to hear for the next, I'm not sure how long, see how we go.
Sure. So my name is Sam Ferrier. I grew up in, essentially here in Moama for a large part of my childhood. I then moved to Melbourne when I was 14 to go to boarding school and since came back for a little bit back to Echuca, Moama. Oh, well, for a year. Went back again to Melbourne for uni and a few years of work and have finally relocated myself back where I call home.
Yeah, right.
So I'm living here. I would probably, I don't know what I'd call myself, probably a passionate environmentalist. Not so much a greenie, but someone that's passionate about the environment and protecting it. Yeah. Mm.
Pretty important though, isn't it? Like, shouldn't we all be trying to protect it and be passionate about the place we live on?
ideally, in an ideal world.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's getting better. It's definitely getting better in terms of more awareness for the general public.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, what was boarding school like? Hard?
I loved it.
Which boarding school did you go?
Caulfield Grammar.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, in Melbourne. So
some pretty good facilities there. I remember going there for a footy thing like years ago, and like just going from a Catholic school in Bendigo to that school was amazing.
Yeah, very, very fortunate.
Did you miss home though, like such a young age moving away?
I think I probably did in a couple of instances, but I don't recall ever being homesick. I think because you're so distracted by, you know, living with your friends, and thankfully it was a co-ed boarding school, so I also got to go there with my brother and sister.
Yeah.
But you know what it's like, high school is jam-packed, you know, you're doing sport and academia and homework and that sort of thing, so you don't really get time to miss home, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not for me.
And then that relationship with Echuca Moama, like over those years, coming back for a while and going back to Melbourne, was that, I don't know, I guess the ultimate decision to come home, just happy to be back, kind of thing?
Happy to be back, yeah. I think the decision was made for me when this position came up for work, which is what I'm currently doing. There was a space in the middle there where I was working in Shepparton, so I gradually gravitated back towards here. But I think if the job opportunity was elsewhere, that's where I would be. So it just happened to be that it was in Echuca, and it just worked out really nicely.
Do you want to maybe explain to the listeners what you, because your job's pretty much related to why I wanted to talk to you about environmental stuff, but did you want to maybe explain to the listeners what your role is for the local shire?
Yes, so I'm working for Campaspe Shire, and I'm the Environmental Projects Officer, education officer.
Yeah.
Which I'm very fortunate to have, because I essentially get paid to do what I love.
It's pretty amazing, that, isn't it? Like, I think I used to when I first started teaching, but then the longer you do it, you're like, it becomes a job and not a passion anymore. And
don't tell me that.
Maybe I'm that teaching's different though, because there's so much more to teaching than just one topic. I'm sure if I was teaching running training every day of the week to kids, I'd be still feeling that way. But when did the passion, I guess, for the environment come about? Was that like in school, or when did you start following those kind of dreams?
Probably very much towards the end of school, or even the first year out of school, I think. I did a little bit of travelling when I finished school, and I think that's when I first became exposed to trash, you know, really obvious poor waste management. And growing up somewhere like Australia, you don't notice it's a lot more obvious when there isn't a waste management system that operates effectively. So we're very lucky to the point where we don't have trash on the sides of the road. We don't have smouldering piles of rubbish out the front of our homes, because there's nothing else to do with it. And so it was Kenya that I went to, and I think that's when I first started to notice that there was a problem with consumption and waste generation and litter. And then I obviously had to, I wanted to go to university, and I at first thought I wanted to be a graphic designer.
Bit of a difference here, isn't it?
And then I realised that no, that wasn't something that I wanted to have as a profession. I would keep that as a hobby, and I haven't done that at all.
Yeah.
Because you change so much after leaving high school. So I ended up finding a course which was a brand new course called a Bachelor of Environments, and so that's really where I guess the passion for environmental studies kicked off, I think. Mm. It was a really a good course that opened my eyes up, I guess, to the different aspects of the environment as a social science, really. I guess that's probably where it started.
Take me back to Kenya. What was that like? I've had so many runners on this podcast who, well, everyone races the Kenyans, but no one's ever been to Kenya.
Oh, really?
It would have been pretty eye-opening, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as a 19-year-old by myself.
By yourself? Yeah,
so I just decided that that's what I wanted to do, and I hooked myself up with a volunteer organisation and you know, did the typical volunteerism type thing, working in a school and, you know, no qualifications. So I can't guarantee that I actually helped that much, but it was certainly an eye-opening experience. Working with the children as well as the women that looked after the orphanage was truly eye-opening, an amazing experience. And it's a beautiful country. It was a city called Mombasa, which is on the coast. It's the second biggest city after Nairobi in terms of population. And yeah, had the opportunity to go on safari and see all the wild and wonderful things. And yeah.
It's funny though, the amount of things that you could come home with and you'd be awestruck by, that the rubbish on the side of the road was so prominent. Like, you know, you could have come home and, you know, dedicated your life to helping kids in orphanages or become teacher and teaching poor schools or whatever it was, but you've ended up with the rubbish as being the number one thing.
Yeah, I've actually never thought of it like that. You're quite right.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I guess, that's a similar experience now that I have with a lot of countries that I go to, is that I look for I look for rubbish and I look for bins and how things work. And yeah,
well, I guess it's kind of that we've just come back from Europe not so long ago, and you know, you're in Kenya and saying how good the system is in Australia, but some of those European countries you go to, it's the, you almost look down on Australia's kind of use of plastic and the recycling system somewhere and the cashing in cans, and like some of those European countries are amazing just how progressive they are with the recycling.
Yeah.
So it's, do you get that as well?
They're,
like,
they're so far advanced in front of Australia. I mean, we're still trying to get recycling right. But yeah, as you say, Europe really has paved the way in terms of how they separate their waste, how they minimise their waste. They've got it right. Yeah.
Well, just even the way you can't buy like plastic bottles of Coke, it like rather comes in glass or a can, and it's your only option. And pretty amazing.
Yeah,
you must, as you said before though, the whole things are getting better. Like, do you feel like the tide is turning working in this industry?
I really do, and I think if you had have asked me that a year ago, I probably wouldn't have said so. I don't know if you agree, but I think there's been a lot more media coverage, and I think it's the issue of climate change and you know, the amount of waste that we're generating, particularly in Western society. It is becoming more publicly known. There is a lot more awareness. I think maybe it's just because I'm in the industry, but I think the War on Waste series that the ABC did this year certainly has had a lot to do with that, particularly in Australia. Well, in Australia.
It's pretty amazing, that, wasn't it? Like, it's, I think when I first came across your work was at that Plastic Paradise filming, like a couple of years ago. Was that 2 years ago? Maybe this time of year?
I think it probably was, start of last year,
Start of last year, yeah, right. That's right, I'd just come back from Berlin the first time, but kind of, I can't remember nights like that in the past where you could see a flyer at a local supermarket about this screening and it was reasonably cheap to go to, and it was one of those things that we kind of went to because we were half curious, and if something's 2K down the road, it's just like, I don't know, it just felt like opportunities are now there to learn about things locally. And then from there, we've kind of, we went home so frightened after, well, not frightened, but just like, just I guess aware, and like you're looking at containers differently and you're looking at drink bottles and just all this plastic stuff you just notice, and now you know where it's going, and it just makes you quite aware and quite frightened about the impact it's having on the earth.
That's right. It is shocking, and I think seeing a lot of those documentaries, so I guess for the listeners, for those who don't know the documentary that you're talking about, it was Plastic Paradise, wasn't it, that we screened. So I think one of the first documentaries I watched about plastic waste was Bag It.
Okay.
And that's a similar type story, but it follows an everyday American man who was not particularly interested in the environment, but one day decided, you know, hang on, we're actually using a lot of plastic bags, and what's up with that? As you're saying, with the fact that these little events and awareness type campaigns are popping up locally, I think that's very much come about, and it's happening all over the state. And I think that's a lot to do with the fact that the state government has been relatively slow to react in terms of single-use plastic and plastic bags and plastic pollution, the amount that's ending up in the oceans, as we discovered in that documentary that we watched. So there are pockets of local people and communities that are banding together and saying this is not good enough. We need to create some awareness in the community. We need to have these film screenings. We need to lobby the state government, because without that pressure, nothing's going to happen.
Well, it kind of goes back to like the project campaign. Like, it was, I don't know, the more attention you started spending to it, it just seemed to pop up everywhere. Like, project did that pressure on the government and played the states off against each other, and because that's now it's passed, hasn't it? Like, the ban the bags can go ahead.
So they've the Victorian government has announced that they will ban single-use plastic bags, but we don't know what the ban will look like yet, so it's currently open for public consultation. So there's an online survey which will close at the end of January, and I suppose the feedback or the results from that survey will hopefully determine what the plastic bag ban will look like and when it will be enforced.
So do you mean there could be options where the bag's still there but it's going to cost you 5 cents, or there's a limited number amount of bags that you can get, or it won't just be
I think it'll probably be, how strict will the ban be in terms of, will it include just the lightweight single-use plastic shopping bags, or will it also include the heavier weight ones, such as the, you know, the department style type bags, which are a bit thicker, like Myers bags? Will it include other types of plastic packaging? So there's a push from particular community groups as to the fact that it should include food packaging, unnecessary wrapping of fruit and vegetables.
Yeah, when they wrap up the bananas and apples and stuff like that.
Yeah, polystyrene trays and glad wrap, and, you know, 3 cos lettuces wrapped up in a plastic bag, and whether it should include microbeads and those sorts of things. So there's a few details, you know, whether there should be exceptions to the ban, such as for medical reasons or security reasons.
So. Yeah, hygiene, stuff like that, I suppose. And does my head in, like, after having some of this knowledge now, though, like going to the supermarket and seeing people put 3 apples in one bag, and then, like, it's just those little kind of plastic bags, and then they still walk out
put in
the plastic
bag.
And I don't know, but I remember when I just stopped doing it, like, and you feel a bit like you're inconveniencing the checkout girls a bit, and boys, but it's just so easy to save plastic bag that way. And, like, we put our spinach now in the mushroom bags,
so
use the mushroom bags to go to work, or it's recyclable, and little things like that. It's just amazing me that some people still don't do it. And I guess you must hate walking through the supermarket, mustn't you, just watching that stuff?
Look, it is hard sometimes, but I also don't get frustrated. I try not to get frustrated by it, because I don't want those things to frustrate me. I would prefer to focus on the good things that are happening, because otherwise I'll feel like I'm just beating my head against a brick wall, I think. So when I see people that have their reusable bags, that makes me happy. Or, you know, if someone is engaging in a conversation and, you know, they see a reusable bag, or they see, for example, you using your one of the mushroom bags for your spinach, and that gives them the idea, well, I could use the mushroom bag as well, because I don't have anything else. So yes, it is potentially quite easy to be frustrated by the little things, but it's a lot of the time people don't know, and so without that awareness, you can't expect people to make a change. So I guess that's what I've been trying to do for the last couple of years, is purely focus on that awareness, education, and it's what I do for my work as well. Because without that, it's really hard to point the finger and blame people and say, well, why are you using plastic shopping bags every time you go shopping? When that's probably starting to change, that trend now, but there's lots of other little things, like plastic straws, just saying no to plastic straws. So without being aware of the impacts that plastic straws can have, well, you're not going to start refusing them. because you won't make that connection.
Yeah, and we've all come that far, haven't we? Like, I've used plastic bags for 10 years before I stopped doing it.
Yeah, I did too. Because
I just didn't know. Like, yeah. You're right, it's that whole awareness thing. And do you find, though, now it's a generational thing? Like, I think of the kids at school and what you guys do through the Shire, and like it's in the curriculum now, and as you said, like War and Waste, we're showing that to kids at school because there's resources that are engaging available for the kids. And do you think, I don't know, I always compare it to other issues that you just think that we're not going to make those same mistakes again because now we know.
Yes, I do agree. The kids that are going through school at the moment are far more advanced than what you and I would have been when we were in primary school, and they're the ones that are telling their parents how to recycle, what goes in the recycling bin, to remember to take their reusable bags, because it's been ingrained in them from school. Like you say, it's more embedded into the schools now. They recycle at school, and they have veggie gardens and composting and chooks at school. And but the flip side to that is that our maybe our grandparents' parents, or potentially even our grandparents, didn't grow up with single-use plastic. So if you ask them what they used when they used to go shopping, back in the day, and they would have said, they would say to you, "Oh, we had paper bags that we used to reuse and reuse because they were really thick," or we would take our baskets, or we would take our, when they would go and get go to the deli or to the takeaway food shop, they would bring their saucepans and get them to fill up their saucepans. So really what we're trying to do is go back to that. So we just want to wipe out the past 50 or 60 years or so, when this really convenient and clever product, plastic, has been invented and completely infiltrated our lives. Because to be honest, it is a really, really efficient product. It's a really, it's durable, it's waterproof, it's cheap to make.
Yeah. Well, that doco does a real good job, that Plastic Paradise, of going back and documenting why it was made and how it was made.
Exactly.
And just how it's on absolutely everything now, because it's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I guess, that consumerism that has changed so much as well in the past 50 years. You look at people's furniture back then and how durable it was, and you'd buy one thing and stick with it for ages, whereas now we tend to buy stuff, and I always think it just look what kids get for Christmas. Like, it's cool for 2 months and it's just plastic crap kind of thing, and then it's going to keep them busy for 2 months, and then it's going
to
be
straight
gone
to
again.
Landfill.
Yeah, straight to landfill, the op shop, and then to landfill. And I think that's changed as well, that we just buy a lot of stuff now because it's cheap. Like, you walk into Kmart or Target, and the amount of stuff you can get for $20 or $30
under
bucks, $20. Just little plastic things, is unbelievable.
And people buy it thinking that they're getting a bargain, but not really thinking about the whole of life of that, whatever it is that they're buying. And I guess on top of that, there's products now, particularly electrical items and tech products, that are planned to become obsolete. So things like iPhones and toasters and washing machines, you would notice they're not made like they used to be. Not that iPhones were around, but things like washing machines and
microwaves, that microwave
fridges
behind you, that's just
new
because the other one broke after about 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. So they don't make them to last anymore, and they don't make them to be repaired. So if you buy a $20 kettle from Kmart and it breaks in a year's time or 2 years' time, the chances of you being able to get that repaired for under the price that you bought it for is next to nothing. So
you just go buy another one, don't you?
Like, that's right.
Or the time it's gonna, that time in money, in a way, like, it's not wasting my time going to ring someone up and book in to get my microwave fixed or kettle, if I can just pop in on the way home from work and buy a new one for $20.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
it's scary,
it's,
isn't
it's
it?
It's partly our mindset and the way that we consume, and I think manufacturers and the industry also have a little bit of a responsibility there.
Is that changing a bit? Like, is that, are they more accountable now than they were back in the day?
That's a good question. I think it varies from company to company and industry to industry, because at the moment there's a federal government initiative which is it's a television and computer buyback scheme. So it means that television and computer manufacturers are responsible for recycling those products at the end of their life. So they have to incorporate a particular a cost into the retail price of that product to pay for the reprocessing and recycling of those products. So, yeah. I mean, it's a really good way of ensuring that products don't end up in landfill and that they actually are recycled at the end of their life. So I think if that were to be expanded to incorporate more than just televisions and computers, then that would be really ideal. Because if you were to pay an extra, for example, if you buy a new Mac computer, you wouldn't really notice an extra $5 or $10 on a, I don't know what they're worth, $2,000 or $3,000 now. So if everyone paid an extra $5 or $10 at the front end when they purchased the product, and that money was then put towards the end of life for that product to make sure that it gets dismantled properly and each of the components recycled, well, you know, there's a solution, as opposed to the manufacturer is just wiping their hands clean and saying, you know, we know this is going to break in 2 years and you're going to deal with it.
Yeah, and that's the way, isn't it? Like, you start looking at how many MacBooks there are, or iPhones, or Samsung Galaxies, and the amount of plastic that's built into those things. And
that's right.
Yeah, and even like those bulk amount of, you know, little figurines and toys. Like, I think that documentary did really good at just, you know, looking at these old Power Ranger toys that were cool back in the day, but they just end up, because they can't, that's the whole thing with plastic, isn't it? Like, it just cannot break down.
Yeah, that's right. So it just, well, they say every piece of plastic ever made still exists today. Plastic doesn't, as you say, it doesn't break down, it just breaks up into tinier and tinier pieces, whether that be in the ocean or on land or in a tip recycling facility, whatever. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces, and so that's why it's such a threat, particularly when it does enter the natural environment or the marine environment, because it's harder to pick up, it's harder to collect, and it's more likely to be mistaken for food. So, you know, fish and turtles and birds and whatever else are relying on the ocean for their food, are eating these microplastics.
Yeah, we're eating the
fish. That's right.
Because it'd be just micro, wouldn't it? Like, we wouldn't even know.
You can't see it. Yeah. It's that small.
Mm. That's pretty scary. Pretty scary. Have you seen the doco, the true cost as well? It talks about like clothing and stuff, and how it's on Netflix. It's good, like H&M and stuff, and Cotton On. I'm just naming all these businesses. It's probably not even them, but pretty much release clothes that are due to go out of fashion really quick because you need to get the next thing, and it's all that. But then you go back to where this stuff's getting made in, you know, poor Asian countries for low cost, and the pesticides they're spraying on the crops, and like for the cotton, and just like, it's really, when you think about where your clothing comes from and what you're consuming, where what that is encouraging, it's quite frightening.
Absolutely. That's something that's very much become apparent, that whole fast fashion what do you call it, a movement, I don't know. It's a phenomenon at the moment, and like you say, it's seasons of clothes that are designed to be out of fashion within 8 to 10 weeks, which is, you know, and these are not good clothes. They're
pop buttons,
$10 t-shirts and $20 pants and things like that. So one thing that came out of the war on waste was, I think, Australia disposes of 6 tons of clothing, so, you know, clothing waste, every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Six tons of clothing waste is, and Craig Rucastle actually demonstrated what that looked like. I don't know if you remember, but he did it in one of the malls in Sydney, and it was a huge pile. And no one would ever guess that that was 10 minutes worth of clothing waste just in Australia.
Just goes, yeah.
So, and that, a lot of that is going to landfill as well, because it's not good enough to be handed to the op shops. It's not good enough to be resold. So it's ending up in landfill. And as you say, you think about the resources that went into making those clothing items, the cotton, the water, the labour.
Yeah, and the long labour for, you know, small wages and stuff like that, and the stress and the conditions that labour is undertaken in, and sweatshops and factories and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, when you buy that $10 t-shirt from Cotton On or wherever, that's what you're supporting, that whole cycle. And yeah, it's a fair chance it's going to end up in the bin or as a rag somewhere, or you know, yeah, at the op shop hopefully, and gets a bit more life about it. Do you think that movement's coming in as well though? Like, I don't know if it's just because you're people you hang around, and I'm always cautious that life is more than just the people you know regularly, but I've got a lot of friends now who kind of shop at op shops and look for bargains, and you go to Melbourne and there's like hipster op shop stores, and like, I don't know, that wasn't there 5 years ago, was it?
Oh, I would think it was. Yeah. I don't know, you might be right. I don't know if that's changing. I mean, op shops have been a thing for a long time, but maybe the, you know, the vintage fashion, I guess, has maybe become more prominent in recent years. Or maybe it's more fashionable for younger people to be wearing secondhand clothes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely, I don't know, it's certainly a good way to shop, I suppose.
It's another movement, isn't it? Like, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, just all these little things. And what else is on the wall? Waste? Oh, the coffee cups. Like, who knew that before they watched that? Like, and then we filled the tram up and he's driving around on that. And, like, just crazy. And there's been, like, I know just on social media, you see kind of cafes almost bragging about it now. It's like, we're one of the ones who has the recyclable version and you can still get your takeaway coffees from here. Like, was that common knowledge? I'm sure it was.
Oh, no, no. Nah. Most people were shocked, I think. Yeah, yeah. And it's nice to see, I think, so after the War on Waste series, I think Keep Cup sales went up 600% almost immediately. And as such, they ran out of stock and all that sort of thing, which is a fantastic thing to see.
Good problem to have, yeah.
A good problem to have. And then off the back of that, a lot of cafes have started offering discounts for people that bring their reusable coffee cups when they get their takeaways. And, you know, so that's the initiative that they showed on the show was called Responsible Cafes. So that as well has really blossomed, which is another positive outcome of the show, I think. But I guess the thing with Keep Cups and all those fancy gadgets is that they're all... They're great, but they're only great if you use them. So, you know, there's no point bragging about the fact that you have three Keep Cups and they sit on your shelf looking really nice.
Yeah. And you put up the Instagram photo up and stuff like that. But you need to use it every day of the week, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Or you need to justify the resources that went into making your reusable item, I guess, which is another way of thinking about it.
Yeah, what other things would people not know about? Like, obviously you've got the plastic bag and now the coffee cups that we're talking about and the plastic in clothing, but what other things, I guess, can people do that, just small things that they wouldn't be aware would make a massive difference in the... Because you think about this stuff over a year. Like, you just used reusable bags at the supermarket for a year. You saved a whole stack of plastic. And you do
it's
the...
a lot.
Yeah, reusable cups. And then if everyone in your house does that or street does that or whatever, like... It adds up pretty quick if you can be consistent with these kind of strategies.
Absolutely. I think one of the easiest ones, and it's certainly the one that I started with, because all of these things are, you know, these little changes that we're talking about, if I would suggest if anyone wants to make any of the changes is to do one at a time, not to think that you can... eliminate all single-use plastic from your life from tomorrow or anything like that. So do them one at a time and don't think that you're going to be perfect from the get-go. So it's okay if you forget your bag or, you know, forget to say no to a straw or something like that. Just remember the next time.
I'm laughing because I've been at the checkout before and I'm like, I can fit this in pockets. And you feel like you're going back to the dark side and you've got to ask for one plastic
That's
bag.
Right.
Yeah.
So... As I was going to say, was plastic water bottles.
Yeah.
So purchasing water from a water bottle, for me, it doesn't make sense. It's you're going to pay 1,000 times the price of what you would pay to get water out of the tap. So economically, it doesn't make sense. Yes, the bottles are recyclable, but they're made of plastic. They're made of petrol. They are going to last forever. People often say, "Oh, well, it's okay because I reuse my Mount Franklin bottle. I keep filling it up and reusing it that way." But there's a lot of, and I don't like to talk about the health impacts too much.
BPA and stuff. BPA.
That's it. Bisphenol A.
Yeah.
It can leach into your body and actually be quite detrimental and have carcinogenic effects even. So just try and eliminate buying plastic water bottles, and the best way to do that is to get yourself a really good reusable drink bottle. Whether it's stainless steel, whether it's glass, whatever you like to drink out of. And buy one and use it every day. Keep it with you at all times. And that's really changed. It's sort of changed the way I consume water. I guess it helps me consume water.
It helps you be alive. But isn't it funny the amount of, like every fun run I go to in the show bay or whatever is a publicity kind of promo plastic drink bottle that I'm not going to, like, it's got the sponsors on there and people have, paid to have their logos on that drink bottle. And we had, when we moved house, we had a stack of it. It would have been like 25 different promo drink bottles that you get and you're like, well, I don't want to chuck it out because we've just paid an entry fee and that's part of the, part of the kind of, the package, I guess, but at the same time, you never used them. Like,
that's right.
Drink bottles from like 5 years ago that you're never going to use. I hated drinking out of those plastic ones.
Yeah, they taste awful.
They do. And they're, like, in a way, they're probably worse than single use because sometimes they never get a use and
that's
they
right.
end up. Could they be recyclable, those ones? Because they're pretty. Plastic looks different on those ones.
That's a really good question. I don't think you could put them in your curbside recycling bin, because I'm just trying to think of what actually you probably could. They'd probably end up in one of the plastic streams, but I don't think you'd see too many of them going through.
But yeah, they're just junk, like it's
that's yeah. right. Yeah, I've got one sitting on my desk because it was something that came with my induction pack at work, and I don't know what to do with it, so it's just sitting there.
It does my head in when people think that's a good idea, though. Like, yeah, let's do, everyone's going to pay $30 to do this fun run. Let's give them all a plastic. They're all running.
Yeah.
They're all managing their drinking of water probably fine with one of those drink bottles as it is, but at the same time, we'll give them another one. And
yeah, and if it is a promo thing, or if it is a prize or something, then that's fine. You know, let's think of another more sustainable prize or giveaway that we can give. So I've recently I was, our waste contractor donated a few keep cups with their logo on it, so I've got a bag of those, and I can use those as little giveaways when I need to encourage some type of behaviour, or when a student wins a prize, I can give them, not that I would give a student a keep cup to encourage coffee drinking, but I've got some stainless steel drink bottles, so we can still do the promo thing and put our logos on things, but they don't necessarily have to be what we used to do 10 or so years ago with those plastic drink bottles and those trashy
all those little promo things, like little key ringy things, it's just tacky as well. I think, like, it's, yeah. I was just thinking, like, school stuff as well, because our kids at school are good, but they'll come in with their Nike plastic drink bottle and have it on their table every day. But at the same time, if that was an aluminium one or a glass one or whatever, they can use that for the next 10 years, kind of thing, rather than just getting another new one for Christmas or losing that one. Because I think with the value kind of goes down a bit as well. If you've got a $10 drink bottle, you don't mind if it gets stolen or lost or whatever, because you'll just go buy another one.
That's right. It's funny you mention that, because the drink bottle that I have now is the one I've had for the last probably 4 years, and I've really chased after it. I mean, I've left it in some pretty precarious places, and I've taken it travelling with me and all sorts of things, and I've actually turned around after, you know, being 20 minutes away from the place where I think I've left it, and I've gone after it because it's really valuable to me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little bit of an attachment issue, but I don't want to lose it because it's my drink bottle and I don't want to get another one. Mm. So yeah, when you have that value as opposed to it being something that you don't mind if you were to lose it or if it were to get stolen, it changes you.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and but they're durable as well. Like, yeah. I'm thinking of a story. I just got this little promo one, but it was stainless steel when I was in Canada like 6 years ago for a work trip, and remember getting in the car once I was going to a meeting from school and my class was watching me out the window, get in the car, rushing off to a meeting in Shepparton, and the drink bottles come off the roof. And they'd seen me always have it on my desk and stuff. So they've gone out there and got it, and I've thought, got to the meeting and I lost my drink bottle, where could it be? It's got a few scratches on it now, but it was the same drink bottle Carly used last night at the triathlon. Like, it's
fantastic.
Just, yeah, it's funny. But if that was a plastic bottle, it would have been gone.
And
I wouldn't have cared about it. Like, it's just wouldn't have been able to last for, it's probably 5 or 6 years now you're talking about this, that this one drink bottle is just been hovering around, and sometimes we go to, but it's always here because it's got some value and it's still got those Canadian labels on it that bring back memories. And
it's got a story attached to it.
100%. First time I've told that story, but now it's out there, which is good. So what you touched on, the straws and stuff before as well, because that would be another one that, how many times does the drink at the cafe just automatically come with a straw and you don't think twice about it? And
it's a really hard one, especially if you're not used to saying something before you order a drink. I slip up all the time, but I tend not to drink drinks that come with straws for some reason. I tend to stick to...
They're expensive. It's like $8 for a smoothie. Just get a coffee.
The juices and the gin and tonics and that sort of thing.
I'm with you.
Yeah, stick to the... Just by chance, I suppose. Or by preference. Again, like we're saying, if you, remembering to bring your reusable bags to the supermarket, it's a similar thing. It's, I'll have this, thank you, but don't worry about the straw. So it's really just about habit. And sometimes they'll, put a straw in it and you think, oh, damn it, I forgot. And then you sort of think, well, I can't really take it out now because it's already been in the drink, and so it's going to go in the bin anyway. So...
Are there people in the industry that are like real cutthroat like that though? Like, it's I guess like black and white, that if they make a mistake like that, they'd be down on themselves, and or if the cafe accidentally made that mistake, they'd be leaving bad reviews and things like that. Like, there's pretty diehards out
there.
No,
I don't think so. No, I think it's all pretty good.
You need to talk to Carly. Carly's like on to me, like, I take like one less reusable bag, and she's like, told you about this stuff, this is never going to break down. It's like, we're much better than we were, just cut me some slack, I'm getting there.
Which I guess it depends what your expectations are of yourself and who you're living with and that sort of thing. I mean, I have people that that think I'm going to, yell at them or something when they've got a disposable coffee cup or, but I'm not there to tell people what to do, because I slip up and I forget things as well. So it's not about being perfect, and it's not about pointing the finger and saying, don't you understand?
Yeah. And that's not the best way to educate people.
That's right. In the first place.
I think sharing that passion for it though, Carly put it in a really good way and just said, you know how you get really passionate about running and that's be all and end all. She's like, when you bring home a plastic bag or whatever it is, that's my passion. So it's like a kick in the guts. I'm like, oh, now I know. Because it's so much easier to buy, even what was I buying the other day? Oh, olive oil. The plastic one's like $2.50, the glass one's like $6. You're like, oh, I'm trying to keep this bill down here. I already put too much stuff in this trolley. But then when she told me, I was like, no, this is important that we do this.
That's a really... a really interesting way of putting it, actually.
Yeah, but then now I have the knowledge around where that plastic bottle's going to end up, and compared to the glass bottle. And I guess when you spend a lot of time in the environment and exercising and loving where you live, kind of thing, that it's worth spending an extra $2.50 on that other bottle.
Yeah, and it is about knowing the consequences. If not, so if. Like we've said, if you're unaware of of what the consequence is of your purchasing choice, then you're not really empowered to make a decision, or you're going to go the cheapest option, and that tends to be what happens. We choose the cheapest and most convenient thing unless we know that that is immoral, or it's bad for the environment, or it's tied up in unethical labour, or whatever.
Mm. So, and all that's getting better too, isn't it? Like the labelling of products. Like, I know that kind of the stars, which are kind of a bit all over the place, but kind of seeing now what's made in Australia, and there's all kind of different ticks about where it's made and if it's Australian owned and all that kind of stuff. Do you think recycling will, you know, maybe the where this was produced kind of in what kind of conditions and where it's going to end up will kind of be the next step?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if it's as simple as that, because I recently did a little bit of an investigation where each of our recycling streams went after it. We've got a factory in Echuca called the Materials Recovery Facility, and that's where all of your curbside recycling goes. So everything that you put in your yellow bin ends up there, and then it gets sorted by some machines and baled according to what type of item it is, whether it's aluminium, plastic, glass, steel, paper or cardboard. And those items will be transported to a varying number of places depending on who's going to pay the biggest dollar for it. So a lot of our stuff will go to Melbourne, some of it will get transported interstate, and some of it will get exported overseas. So previously a lot of our plastic went to China, or and it still is a lot of...
Why are they saying? Why does it go to China?
Because they're paying for it. It's low value, high volume waste, and they have the facilities to process it cheaply. They've got cheap labour. They're more likely to recycle it into something else and on sell it. But at the end of this year, or sometime soon at least, China's already announced that they're not going to take our plastic anymore. So unless it comes in a really clean, pelletized form, so we've got to have a shift of where we're sending our plastic, and perhaps that needs to be, perhaps it needs to remain on shore. So I think all of that is really dependent. Where things end up after we recycle them is really dependent on the market, and it depends on the global economy. There's all sorts of things at play, so it's a bit difficult to say, to put on the bottom of a plastic bottle, for example, that this is going to end up in, you know, Melbourne, for example. But there are some things that we can do. So I put together a little bit of a brochure recently, which gave a general idea as to where our products ended up. So, for example, an aluminium can, perhaps it goes to Melbourne and it's likely to be recycled into another aluminium can, and it can keep doing that over and over again. It doesn't need any more virgin material to become another can. So,
What would it, like a Mount Franklin bottle, where would that go? Put you on the spot here.
That might depend. So at the moment it might be going to Asia, China, Malaysia, or I couldn't tell you. And that could get turned into another plastic bottle or something else of a lower value, a lower grade plastic generally.
Was it Catalyst or Insight that did that story on just roadside recycling stuff was just going straight to the tip and just buried kind of thing?
Four Corners,
yeah.
Yeah. That was a really interesting episode, actually, but I wouldn't say that applies to Victoria. That was very much a New South Wales, Queensland focused story. It was a little bit of a shame to see that. Personally, I think that was reflected on the whole of Australia, I suppose. Whereas I think in Victoria we have far better far better recycling systems. Our glass is not getting stockpiled the way that it is, that it was portrayed in that show.
Yeah.
And we, I should hope that we don't have those major incidences of, you know, dumping on riversides and in natural environments, and the corruption between the environmental agencies and private stakeholders. I mean, it does happen, but I think that was a little bit of an isolated incident there.
Yeah. What about just like the general litter? Like, I don't know, sometimes running though, you think it's not a problem anymore, and back at those Clean Up Australia Day campaigns, and everyone knows you just don't chuck out rubbish on the side of the road or in the side of the bush, but it still happens. Like, do you guys have like stats and data to back up if it's going up or down, or?
No, I don't. We have statewide data, I think. There's a website called the Victorian Litter Action Alliance.
Yeah.
Which has some good resources. But yeah, you're right. I actually didn't think that littering was a thing anymore until really recently. I didn't think people threw things out of their car windows. I didn't think people blatantly, you know, dropped things in a gutter. And I feel really naive to think that now, because I think more recently, being exposed to this role, for work, it's not the case. It really does happen, and it is an issue, but it's an issue everywhere. And I think you're quite right in saying that it's not until you go running or walking and you're actually up close, you know, you can see. I was only talking to someone about this yesterday, but you know, you might see a roadside and you can't see any rubbish in there, so you know, you think it looks clean and fine, and then you actually walk through it or run through it, and you know, you see all the glistening cans and bottles and things that have been there for a really long time. So yeah, I couldn't tell you if it's getting better or worse. That's an interesting question. I would like to think that it is getting better. There's more awareness, particularly with Clean Up Australia Day and that sort of thing now, and I think with the younger generation coming through, it should certainly be improving.
They're going to save us, aren't they? Like the younger generation. Like,
I hope so.
Is this something similar to kind of, you know, in the past that governments are going to apologise for in 50 years' time and look at, well, your grandfathers were just stupid and they didn't know and we're going to fix it now?
Yeah, or they did know and they still did it anyway.
They were getting paid a lot of money to do it, so they just kept going,
Like, don't you think maybe, you know, in 50 years' time or something, we'll be telling our children or grandchildren or whoever the young generation is, and we'll say, we used to put petrol in our cars. And that's how we got around. Everyone would jump in this little box and, you know, sit by ourselves and, you know, and then we would fill it up again when it was empty. But where did the petrol come from? Oh, we dug it out of the ground. And then what? Oh, well, then we ran out.
We just kept digging. But it's crazy to think like this is Dani, like their massive mine project. Mm-hmm. And like, you're just like, this can't be real. Like, it just, I don't know. Like, I'm sure people in those roles of, you know, you got a million things on and they got people researching this. But for me, sitting back in a Chukumal hammer and just a school teacher, like, it just doesn't make any sense sometimes.
Isn't it a no-brainer for us?
But,
you know, that's where money and politics come into play. I don't think it's because they're stupid. I think it's because someone's waving, well, you know, Adani's waving a whole wad of cash. The banks are supposedly going to finance it. The government is supposedly going to finance it. I sure as hell don't hope it goes ahead.
Have you been paying much attention to Lydia Thorpe? Just got into the Greens, first Indigenous like state member of parliament.
She's
she definitely got to check out her speech. She got sworn in yesterday and called him out on it. And she's like, I'm here to have a crack at this stuff. Northcote,
fantastic.
Pretty progressive kind of part of Melbourne, of course.
Yeah.
And they've voted her in. And because Benny actually went down and did a gig for her at one of her, I don't know, launch days or something like that. So he got me onto her. And then I was just looking at it and, when you see like people like that going into government, you're like, you go, like, just, it's, I don't know, you just see more of those figures starting to appear, and it just is obviously backed by the people now, and they're voting these people into
those
parties. But
and they're young people as well. I mean, you look at the recent New Zealand Prime Minister as well.
Yeah,
young female. So yeah, people are coming out of the woodwork, yeah. And they're smart and they're ready for action.
And New Zealand, like, way better than us with recycling?
I would think so. I actually don't know. Yeah. I haven't been there, and I don't really know much about their systems.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I've just been keeping track of their all this Manus Island kind of stuff, and just how they're like, yeah, we'll have them. It's okay. Stop spending all this money on putting them there for years and years.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, good on you, New Zealand. It's I'm proud of you guys, even though I've got nothing to do with you. But,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it would be nice to feel the same way about our own our own backyard, but unfortunately, it's not the case in that sense. Mm.
When did you launch kind of the Echuca Moama plastic bag free? When did that kind of kick off?
So that was the start of last year.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, the beginning of last year. I had attended I knew that there were plastic bag free communities and towns popping up all over Victoria and also throughout Australia, and I attended one of the initial plastic bag free Victoria meetings in Melbourne. I may have been living in Melbourne at the time, I can't remember. And that really inspired me to start something up myself, because I thought I could, you know, I could help this group really push the Victorian government for a plastic bag ban and organise events and campaigns with them. But I spoke to a couple of the organisers and I said, look, I'm, you know, moving or now living back in my hometown, and I think I can get something started there. What do you think? And they said, that is the most, one of the most effective things you can do is just to get your community on board. So that's what I did. I saw a gap, and I just decided to start up a little group of volunteers and a Facebook group, and that's where it all started.
Tapped a few people on the shoulder and kind of told them about it, and linked up, got the super team together, and and it's just gone on, hasn't it? I'm actually surprised to hear you just say started last year. Like, from what I've read and been at the meet or been at that one screening, and I thought you'd been around for like 5 years or something.
No,
like the progress
absolutely
you guys
not. We've been going pretty gung ho. It's been fun. We've probably done, I would say, 3 or 4 film screenings now. Almost all of them to do with plastic pollution, but the most recent one was the new Al Gore.
Al Gore.
Yeah.
I was going to go with that. Yeah.
So the sequel to An Inconvenient Truth. And for those who
Have you guys done two? Is there two Al Gore movies?
There's two Al Gore movies. We did a film screening for the second one. So the first one was released 10 years ago, and that was An Inconvenient Truth. And then the most recent one that he released was An Inconvenient Sequel, and that's the one that we screened at the Paramount Theatre and had a fundraiser for. So we've been doing that. We've been busily making boomerang bags as well. So we thought that... Well,
do you want to explain that concept?
Because
actually I need to know myself. So I walked out of Forever Fresh the other day and said, do you want a boomerang bag? And I'm like... don't know enough about, like, do I take these? Well, yeah, obviously, it's quite
I'm so pleased to hear that you were offered one.
Yeah, I only had a few little things. I could manage with this, Sam, but thank you anyway.
No, that's great. So, boomerang bags, I suppose, with plastic bag free, we're telling people to try and avoid using plastic shopping bags. Mm. So, if we're doing that, well, we need to provide an alternative. And the most fitting solution is boomerang bags. So boomerang bags started up in Burleigh Heads. Two young ladies who directly saw the impacts of plastic pollution living on the ocean, that sort of thing, and thought, well, why don't we start getting people to make their own reusable bags? And as we've already discussed, obviously, a lot of resources goes into material, even if they are reusable. So the boomerang bags are actually made out of recycled material. So old sheets and pillowcases and curtains things that...
wedding dresses, stuff.
we haven't had any wedding dresses, but...
limited edition, like that.
I'll be really
find
pleased.
Find someone who's been divorced and like keen to get rid of it, and you'll be right.
That could be a limited edition.
Yeah.
I like that idea. We do have a One Direction boomerang bag from a One Direction pillowcase, so that's a pretty special one as well. Yeah. So the idea is that community members from all walks of life get together and sew these boomerang bags, and they have a pocket on them which makes them identifiable with the boomerang bag's logo, and a borrow and bring back or a borrow and reuse stamp on it, so people know that they can take it and either bring it back to where they found it or pass it on to someone else. So that could be the person in front of you at the supermarket when you're waiting in line and they don't have a bag, just gift them a boomerang bag. Or it could be
and then for them to just keep bringing it back and forth, like as your reusable bag.
Boomerang it. Yeah. So, you know, bring it back, send it to someone else, just keep reusing it yourself. So the best thing about it is, and as you said, they're now available at Forever Fresh. So if you do forget your reusable bags, that there is one there for you, so you're not that person trying to juggle your vegetables.
That was fine.
But when you're caught off guard and you haven't remembered your reusable bag, or perhaps you don't have a reusable bag because it hasn't crossed your mind, so someone like Sam at Forever Fresh can say, "Would you like to take a boomerang bag?" And that's where the conversation starts.
Yeah.
And so that's the idea behind boomerang bags. It's not only a means to replace plastic bags, but it's also a platform to start a conversation with other community members about the way we're consuming plastic bags, the rate that we're doing that, and why is it important that we try and reduce that and replace it with something else. And, you know, who made this bag that I'm using, and how long did it take them, and where did the material come from? And there's a really nice story attached to that.
Well, it's not rocket science, though, is it? Like,
it's so simple.
It keeps people, you know, if they're elderly women or whatever, like a purpose to get up every day and help the community by doing this. Or I know you guys have done it with school groups and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. So like it's awareness, and it keeps they're kind of doing something for their town. And so this is one option. The other option is to take the plastic bag that's come from China or wherever, it's going to break down. It never break down. And it annoys me that people like you guys have got to be passionate about this and get it started yourself, and it isn't just that what everyone does anyway. Like,
I mean, one day it will be.
Yeah.
This is where it starts, right? I mean,
100%.
You know, you think about some of the issues that, you know, 20 or 30 years ago that you think that will never change, but looking back now, it's it seems so foreign. And I hope that this is really the beginning of movement back to something that is more positive on the environment, as opposed to just take.
Are we pretty progressive here? Like, are there a lot of other towns with boomerang bags around Australia? Or
there's I can't remember the exact amount, but I think there's over 450 boomerang bags communities.
Cool.
And it was heavily concentrated on the east coast, the lower east coast of Australia, and has really boomed throughout Australia, and now it's overseas.
Yeah,
so there's communities in New Zealand, America, Africa, Asia. It's totally taking off. It's wonderful.
Yeah, from what you've probably studied and your knowledge, I guess, around like some of the European countries, what do you think, you know, we'll ban the bag, and then what do you think our next step here is in Australia that we'll start doing? I'm only asking because it was so, even just seeing people taking their, I was in Berlin for a week before the marathon, and people would just roll in with all their cans and glass bottles and stuff and put them in a machine, and then it would spit out a voucher that they could use with their shopping. It was just like, how cool. Like, and I'm taking photos of it, and they're like, why are you taking a photo of this stuff? Like,
this is
send it for Carl, and like, you know, I'm not as bad as you think I am, look at me, I'm engaged into this stuff. But
and so what were they using for bags?
That it will have all their bags, like you could buy, well, it was kind of like the Aldi situation. If you didn't have a bag, you'd buy a bag, but the bags you could buy were only like reusable or paper bags. So there wasn't no option to have a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And you could cash in all your recyclable stuff to get vouchers to use for his shopping. Like, it was
makes sense, great.
And the machine was just efficient. Like, you're just putting them in and it's just registering straight away. It was like a TAB machine or something. Like, they wanted to make it work for you, not some clunky old machine that was weighing it or anything like that. And yeah, they were getting just a little voucher out of it, and you could see people scan it at the register to get, you know, costs off their
shopping.
Yeah. Well, were you ever going to get that? That would be cool if we got there.
Oh, gee, I hope so. I mean, it's fun to speculate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's funny because it's all there. It exists. The technology's there. The concepts are there. Our operating might be slightly different in Australia, and we have a different environment in that we have further distances to transport and less dense populations and things like that. So there are a few limiting factors, I think, that and probably a slow political climate for that sort of the appetite for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe that's where we'll end up. I think the idea of just having reusable bags and paper bags at the checkout, that will happen. That will happen soon.
That'll be next
that,
step, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's only New South Wales left to ban plastic bags, and that will have to happen because at the moment they look really silly.
Yeah. Call them out, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and then eventually it will be the whole country that has banned plastic bags, and, you know, each ban is different in how it operates, but... that's something that's definitely going to happen in the near future, I think.
Yeah. Well, going to be a good time to live through, hopefully, this next 10, 15 years, and just watch all the changes unfold and laugh about all the mistakes we've made, hopefully, and just move on from it.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of smart people out there, and there's a lot of, technology is advancing at such a fast pace, and I think not that I think this is something we can design ourselves out of, but there's some really cool stuff happening even now.
Well, even those bees wax wraps, like, we've been using those for a year, and I took them into work, and they weren't giving me a hard time. They're just like, yeah, sure. And then, well, when you got that still in 6 months' time, you'll end up losing it. And then I'm still using it. We've got like five of them, and you just pull them out and just use them. And someone said the other day, like, oh, you still got that? And I'm like, yeah, I have. So get stuff, because you didn't think I still would have had this. But it's like, it's just a no-brainer. Like, I've saved wrapping up my sandwich every day of the week for the last 52 weeks is... all that plastic hasn't ended up in landfill.
And how good does your sandwich look?
Yeah, it looks good. Yeah, they like kicks out. I think that's the whole thing as well. And the whole minimalist movement around, like, those minimalist guys, if you've watched that doco, that's getting wings, and it kind of always heading in the same direction. Like, if you're more of a minimalist, well, you're not going to buy as much, so you're not going to waste as much. And
it's all happening about each of those philosophies or ways of being or lifestyles, they're all about being conscious, I think, and there's so many side effects, I guess, of being conscious of the way you're living and the footprint that you're leaving. So whether that's minimalism or whether that's slow living or whether that's being waste free or whether that's being really health conscious,
Or even like veganism.
All interlink really nicely, because it's we're actually being conscious and we're questioning the way that we're living and the impact that we're having on society and on the environment. And ultimately, I think it just means that we lead a more positive and thoughtful life, and we... we're less wasteful and less irresponsible.
And I think now, like, more than anything with the internet age, like, we want to know this stuff, and you can Google this stuff, and people are getting creative around making documentaries about what happens behind closed doors and in farms and in recycling centres and all, like, what is it? War on Waste is just about to do a season two, aren't they? Like,
starting this Sunday, actually.
Yeah,
so,
I knew it was coming out. I'll try to get this out before that. Just
trying
to get people ready for it.
If not, people can, rewatch it on iView.
What about yourself? How do you find balancing that kind of doing it for a job and then kind of a bit of a passion outside of your job as well, and, like, Do you find it hard to switch off, or you just want to spread the word and take over the world with this kind of message?
I don't feel like I have to switch off because, not from that. Of course, I have to switch off from work and busyness and life and that sort of thing. But I don't feel. Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah. I guess because it is my passion, it's really easy to do at work. So I don't feel like it's a chore or and I'm not too I don't know, I like to, you know, generate conversation and awareness and that sort of thing, but I don't feel like it's to the point where I'm beating myself up or beating other people up about these things. So I feel like I can, I don't know if balance is the right word, but I feel like I don't have too much conflicting priorities, I guess.
I think it's important of someone of your, you know, personality and character to be in this role, though. Like, you're not that kind of stand-up, massive macho, kind of my way or the highway kind of figure. You can talk to someone easily and be just relaxed and chill and get the knowledge across in a non-intimidating way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I only met you like an hour ago, but yes, I'm feeling like I've got all this knowledge, and I'm sure the listeners will the same.
I don't like to preach, and no one likes to be preached at, I don't think. So I try and be careful.
Have you learnt from that, or is it just something you're always good at in the way you presented?
I wouldn't say I'm good at it now.
No, on my intimidation level.
Even though you've just paid me a compliment, I'm not sure.
I guess I ask, there'd be always, you know, those people with the louder voices trying to come across as being right. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes the loudest voices, seem like they're more knowledgeable than the people who are just calm and getting the job done in a way.
And I think you might agree with this, but sometimes those voices, they're just annoying.
Mm.
And you don't want to be told how to do something, or you don't want to be belittled or spoken down on. And
it's,
I really
bullied,
don't want to
in a
be
way. Like, it's intimidating, bullied kind of.
Yeah, and I don't want to be that person. I want to empower people and lift them up.
Yeah, cool. Nothing to do with plastic, but where's some other countries you've been to? which is about, well, not many people have been to Kenya as their first overseas holiday, but like, where else?
I've spent a bit of time in Mexico. I actually did a semester of uni on exchange in Mexico, and I've been back a couple of times since, so I've got a really nice connection with that place. I guess Southeast Asia, the trip that a lot of people do, South America, recently the States, and it took me until last year to get to Europe, actually, so I sort of did a lot of the developing countries before ever getting to the States and to Europe. So it's I've
pretty worldly, though. Some pretty good parts.
I think
there.
just fortunate that I have the the capacity to do that. You know, even when I was, you know, the time that I was going through uni as a poor uni student, I would still manage to be able to fit in a 3-week overseas holiday, and do it really cheaply, but still do it and get a lot out of it. So I think I'm pretty lucky.
Do you find it's pretty, like, rewarding doing what you're doing every week? Like, you must go home each night and kind of be like, you'd like to think that you made a bit of a difference to the world and the future of people, not only locally, but kind of, enforcing the message.
I hope so. Maybe not every day. Maybe not every day I make a difference, but at least I'm working towards something. I don't know if that's something that I consciously think about all that often, but I'd like to think so. I mean, if we can all do, you know, make some sort of positive influence, that'd be a good thing.
I had a kid at school yesterday. There was a grade one girl walking around on yard duty when I was there, and she was taking down what everyone wanted to be when they were older. And this grade four girl said to her, she just wants to do a job that's going to make the world a better place. If that's a nurse or a policeman or a school teacher, I'm like, glad to put school teacher in there. But I was like, this kid's like 9. I'm like, she's got that knowledge. I just don't want to do a job that's just a job you get paid. I want to do a job that you get paid, but you make the world a better place, which gives me hope that if that's happening at Tongala, a small town in a dairy farming community, that surely all the other kids are thinking similar stuff as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Some of the
gonna be
things
a bright future.
That young kids come out with, particularly because I get to go to schools and do presentations and things like that, some of the things that they come out with, it really does give you hope because you realise that yes, it's a little bit of their innocence, but also they want to do good things. They want to be...
But aren't we born that way? Like, I'm sure we're all born...
I guess we are, but maybe as we... I don't know, as we get older, maybe we get corrupted by money. I don't know.
The system and the rat
the
race.
System,
and it's, yeah.
We become either complacent or critical or... When you hear... kids say things like that, I just want to make the world a better place, it's so refreshing and it really does is a bit of a reminder, I think.
And that stuff, like you guys working with schools as well, the local media has been pretty good at covering that stuff and having articles in the newspaper, and it's like, it's good to kind of have that support because I'm sure there's people in some areas of Australia that are banging on the local newspaper's door and not getting any coverage at all.
Yeah, we've been super lucky, particularly with local radio and local newspaper.
Actually, someone said, Benny again, I was running with him the other day and I said, do you know much about Sam? And then he goes, nah, but I heard an interview on the radio, Edge FM, was it Edge?
Yeah, Edge.
So yeah, people listening, which is good.
Yeah, it's great because, as you know, we're trying to get the word out there and it is about awareness, and to have the local media on board, well, that's half the battle, really.
Yeah. Was that with Indy?
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, she's good, isn't she?
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, we did some park run stuff with her as well, and she was really easy to talk to and good at doing stuff.
Absolutely.
Hey, the last question I always ask the guests is, do you have a quote or a philosophy or a mantra that you try and live your life by?
That's a good one. I'd probably suggest two. One being more of an outward one and one being perhaps more of a personal inward one. So I guess the idea that that Earth has enough to provide for every man's need but not every man's greed. And so it's a lot to do with, I guess, what we've been talking about today, which is that we're put on this earth and it can provide for us, but if we're too greedy or the distribution of resources is unequal, well, it can't sustain us. And we can talk about populating Mars or populating another planet, but I really do think that this is not a place that we can just mess up and leave because we've completely stuffed it. I don't know if you've seen the movie WALL-E,
It's
kind of like
Pixar, Disney.
I think that really resonates with me because it really hits home, you know, what our potential future could look like. And
I was listening to something the other day and they talked about all the space junk, so it's not even here on Earth, like it's all this stuff just flying around that we've left up there. And it's just like, it's not good at all.
I only recently learnt about that as well, which is also quite scary. It's not just limited to our Earth and our atmosphere, but it's actually out there flying around in space.
That's a good one though, isn't it?
That
like
would be one.
The resources are there. Some people have too much of it and other people don't have enough.
Other people not enough. And exactly. So it's a whole thing about equality and even with food, there is enough food on the planet for everyone to be healthy and to be able to have 3 meals a day. But that's not the case because we're overproducing in some areas and we're being wasteful, and Western countries, industrialized countries, are consuming far more than what the planet can provide. And so as a consequence, there's people in countries that don't have access to that food and those resources. So that would be that one. And I think one that I've been... I don't know if I could say that I live by it, but it's certainly something that I'm trying to be more conscious of, and that's to be where my feet are. So to be more present and to take... take delight in life's simple pleasures. And I think I don't think I'm bad at it, but it's definitely something that probably listening to a lot of podcasts has has, it's had that impact on me, and I guess hearing people talk about you know, how we can get so caught up in the past and consumed by the future. And particularly with things like electronic devices and being totally consumed by social media. So one thing that that I'm trying to be really conscious of is being where my feet are and being present.
It's tough though, isn't it? Like, it's it's interesting you brought up podcasts, because I sometimes listen to podcasts and it gives me ideas, or it gives me information, it gives me something to worry a bit. Like, I listen to Will Anderson talking to I've got to stuff up his name, so I won't even say what it is because I can't remember it, but the guy who smuggled himself into Manus Island and got stuck there and had to kind of swim out to get to his kind of smugglers who got him in there. And then I'm like, this has really consumed me the last couple of days, because I've got this new information about it over there. And it's just like, right now I'm getting not anxious, but I'm like, I'm trying to tell the kids at school about it, and we're trying to do this, and I'm researching it myself, so that sometimes too much information can overload. And but you're right, it's a massive, I've spoken to heaps of people with similar stuff about just so much going on, and you just, that was one thing to start the podcast actually, just to talk with people without phones going off or gadgets or agendas to get somewhere else and do something afterwards or what's happened during the day. It was just good to simply just talk to one or two people, whoever, and just put it all away.
Absolutely. And this is these types of interactions are ones that we should be putting more value on. I think having face to face and sitting down and having a cup of coffee with their friends instead of text messaging them, you know, when we're just down the street from them. So,
or still sitting there with your friend and being on
each
face
separately, being on our phones. And look, it's easier said than done, but I think at least if we're, you know, putting some things in place to be more conscious of it. I've recently, I'm doing a little experiment where I've deleted Facebook and Instagram from my phone. And
I did Facebook last night. Benny was around here and he told me he didn't. He's like, you don't have to do it now. And I'm like, he's like, you won't do it now.
How
I'm
good,
like,
is it?
But today, the amount of times I pull my phone out at like recess or drove home and get out of the car and you're like, oh, just... And it's not like, the thing is, there's still four other things that you can check. Like, I'll still check Instagram and this and that, but I think I need to go cold turkey and just delete
it all.
Yeah.
And the amount of times you pull your phone out and you think, oh, there's nothing to look at, so you put it back down again, and it makes you realise how, you know, every time we've got a spare moment or every time we're bored, we just pull it out. And I think I'm actually sleeping better because of it.
Yeah. That would be it. And even, that's like waiting in the line and stuff like that. So you can pull your phone out and do it, or you can just wait in line and just look around
and have some deep breaths.
Maybe
chat to someone in front of
you. Do a bit of a body scan and how you're feeling today. But instead, you're just putting... Because the thing is, with like Facebook, you might have all these friends from like high school and stuff, and I don't know, one of them might be on holidays in Queensland, so you don't care. Like, you know, hardly seen this person for 10 years, check it. And I always get worried, where does that... Because I store that in my brain somewhere, I'm sure. And it's just, I'm using brain space with this stuff that I don't need to know and don't care about. I don't know.
And particularly if it's negative information as well, or if it's information that... I don't know, even if it's subconscious, like you say, it's stuff that we don't care about, nor should we care about. If someone that you haven't seen in 10 years is having a holiday in Queensland, you know... What other things could we be focusing on, you know?
You're right, and I follow a lot of like pro runners and stuff, and they'll put out like photos of them looking good in sessions, or like they'll be at the gym at like 12:30 in the afternoon. I'm just like, oh, this makes me feel bad as well because I'm at work and I don't go to the gym and I should be going to the gym and I've got to go out and it's raining tonight in Moama. And so it doesn't matter if it's good or bad stuff, it still has an impact on you.
Yeah, we compare for sure, even if we're not aware of it.
Yeah. I understand. Where can people, if they like what they've heard in this conversation, can they get on a Facebook page or an Instagram page for Plastic Bag Free and kind of keep updated and keep informed?
Yeah, that'd be great. So our Facebook page is Plastic Bag Free Echuca Moama. We have an Instagram, which is also Plastic Bag Free Echuca Moama. And we've got a website, which is www.plasticbagfreeem.org.
Beautiful. Thanks for your time. That was a good chat. It's always good talking to people about who are passionate and they're kind of into stuff. I did do the same thing with a mate the other day. We both bagged out Facebook and Instagram, and then we said, all right, so check out my Instagram page and my Facebook page. And kind of contradicting ourselves
a
bit there.
In a way, I know you're trying to wrap it up, but there's social media for, you know, when social media is used as a tool, I think it's really effective.
Yeah.
So if we're using it to voice an opinion or promote something that we really care about, I think that's when it's really effective.
Mm.
I think when we're using social media to kill time and when we're just scrolling unconsciously, that's when it's detrimental. And that's not to say that I don't do that. But you know, when you're talking to people and you're interviewing people for your podcast and at the end they you know, give their social media pages and that sort of thing, it's because you know, that's what they do and that's what they're passionate about, and that's probably what your listeners are going to want to you know, look up and find more information about. So I think there's a difference.
Massively.
And so long as we can draw that line,
and it's not like when you pull your phone out to search Echuca Moama Plastic Bag Free on Facebook, you accidentally go to your notifications and you check those, and then you look at your friend from Queensland from 10 years ago who's, up on holidays, and then you forget fully what you're actually going to do.
And then half an hour's gone by.
Exactly. And you haven't cooked dinner and you're not sure what you're going to eat for the night and you've missed your run. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Brady. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming around.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.